So I know we've talked about the subsect of the plant community that are alocasia lovers, and yes, they are diehards, but of equal passion and plant nerdiness are the anthurium lovers. And I have noticed in particular a surge in interest in anthuriums in our community over the last couple of years. And no one likes anthuriums more than Cass of Plant Addicted Cass, who joins us today. She has such an inspiring story of how she's overcome adversity and also become a full-time plant lady. And she is the anthurium queen. She has hybridized anthuriums. She knows how to take one anthurium plant and make many more by literally getting them to seed and getting those seeds to grow. This is something that not many people do in the houseplant community, but people in the anthurium community do a lot. So I knew I wanted to bring someone who is super well-versed on how to do it to our audience so that if you want to take your plant nerdiness to the next level, you have a great guide helping you out. So without further ado, let's nerd out with Cass.
Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Welcome, my new friend.
Hello, how are you?
I'm so excited. After I met you at Southeast Plant Show, and you just, when we did our mini interview, you were so lit up about plants. And I remember you looked at me and you were like, I am literally plant addicted, Cass.
I am. This chick. 100%.
So for those of you who don't know you, why don't you tell us how you became plant addicted Cass, the plant lady that you are today?
Yes. Before, like most people, I know the COVID boom is when I came into my addiction. 2019 was actually, I was diagnosed with a broken back. I broke my back and I had just turned 40. So they sent me in for my first mammogram and I was diagnosed with breast cancer. So 2019 was like, rough. I went from being super active, never in the house. I was a CrossFit addict. I was like always out, going to being pretty much immobile between my back, breaking my back and then going through chemo. They wouldn't let me like do anything about my back until I finished my chemo. So I went through all of that and, you know, put on a bunch of weight. The more weight you know, all of that being kind of homebound. It was like, I kind of was like in this hunt for like something to bring me joy again.
Yeah.
And my cousin happened to be visiting and she was like, look, we're going to do a garden. Like we're going to do something. So she took me to the garden center and we got some garden stuff to grow some veggies. But while I was there, I saw the succulents. So I picked up a couple succulents and that is where it all began. And then I quickly phased out of succulents and found like philodendrons and alocasias and all of that. And I kind of started an Instagram because I was getting really excited about it and I had nobody to share it with because everybody was just like, so I started just taking pictures on Instagram and then found like the local Facebook groups and started getting more involved with my local community. And then one of my local friends, he does Instagram and stuff. So he was like, you know, if you want to get seen, you know, start putting your face on there. Everybody sees pictures of plants, everybody, you know, mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I don't know, like this is about my plants. And so, you know, it just kind of picked up from there. And then people, you know, started following me as I started, you know, my crazy addiction. And then I started creating reels and decided I just wanted to have fun with it. Like I wanted to make people laugh. Like as I was sitting there going through hell myself, you know, like I'm very much like humor is what gets me by. And so I decided to, you know, just kind of share that humor and entertainment with everybody. And it seems to be something that everybody likes. So I've just kind of kept to it.
And how did you shift from the succulents, like classic houseplants, to now you're kind of a purveyor of rare and harder to find plants. So what has that looked like?
So it's just been kind of like this self-evolving. And I think I see it a lot in the community where, you know, we start out with a little bit of the easier stuff, the philodendrons. My alocasia phase was short-lived because I couldn't keep them alive.
Yeah, fair. Me too.
And then one of my local girlfriends had a whole bunch of Hoya. And I was like, I had gotten a Hoya and like killed it. And I was like, no, I can't do that. She's like, no, they're really easy. So she broke that down. So then I started like, ooh, I went from philodendron to Hoya. And I saw an Anthurium moroccanum and I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. And so that's kind of where it started. Once you get your eyes like on an Anthurium, like in person, I think that's where it really changes. Cause even one of my girlfriends, Mackenzie, that she has a greenhouse in my backyard. Like she was heavy philodendron, wasn't into Anthurium. And then she comes over and she was like, okay, I get it.
Yeah,
I get it now. So I think once you get your eyes on them and then you see like just the depth, the difference between each leaf, like it's just, I don't know. And the joy those leaves bring me, like I still to this day, like when I will gasp at like a new leaf. I'm like, oh my God, it's so amazing. And I'm like, wait, how is it a leaf is bringing me this much joy?
That's so crazy. I remember when I was in my first year of plant parenthood, I got my first Monstera cutting at a plant swap, and every leaf, it was a juvenile Monstera. So waiting to see every leaf unfurl and see if it was the first fenestrated leaf, it was exhilarating. Like there's no other word for it. It's so wild how somatic, I guess, like the experience of growing plants can be. It's so fascinating to me. And it's so funny how so many of us have the same, I mean, your whole story. I'm like, yeah, totally. I did that too. And I've actually like, I got into rare and now I've circled back to like pothos. Like I was into that and I've gone all the way around the circle back to the beginner, like low maintenance plants. It's so fascinating. So yeah. So you're an Anthurium girly now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I still like people like will comment like I'm an expert. I am by no means an expert. Like I am every day I'm learning something new and a lot of it's trial and error. Like, and a lot of people like, oh, you're so good. I'm like, well, look, you don't see the multiple totes of rehabs that I have because I have killed so many and I have thousands, literally thousands of plants. So it's harder to see the ones that are not thriving because the ones that are thriving, you know, outshine. And I will definitely share on Instagram when I have plant fails as well, because I don't want anybody to think that it's all glitz and glam and perfection. It's not at all. For every amazing, there's a, oh, damn.
I can't believe I did that. I can't believe I forgot to water this plant for 6 months. What was I thinking?
Well, and I have a lot of people because now that I'm selling and while I'm doing this process, like I'm still mastering like my soil, my substrates, and I will find this like great idea. Like I'll listen to a podcast and I'll hear somebody talk about this amazing substrate. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm doing it. And I just dive all in 100% and I'll repot 100 plants or more. And then it's like a few months later, I'm like, why are you mad? And wow. Then I'm like, now I have root rot and 100 plants because it doesn't fit my growing style. And I'm like,
oopsies,
telling people who buy from me, I'm like, hey, if you got a plant from me, you may want to go ahead and repot it.
Right. Wow. So when did the transition into selling plants start for you?
So as my collection has grown and continued to grow, it was like, well, I mean, and I've always kind of dabbled in the local plant sales, you know, like I've always went to the swaps and
marketplace.
Yeah. Well, I haven't done too much on Facebook Marketplace. It's usually the local Facebook group because, you know, that's usually, and especially as I've transitioned to Anthurium, like we were kind of a niche group.
Yes.
So it's not something that, and I take a lot of pride in my babies, especially when I raise them. Like I don't want them to just go to somebody who's just going to like let them die. I'd rather not make the money than send them off to their death.
Yeah. Totally.
So just over time, as my collection grew and people started wanting some, it was like, okay, well, I mean, now I've produced 200 babies. I can't keep all 200 of them. And you know, everybody on Instagram was like, hey, I want one of your babies. I want your baby. So I started like posting them on my Instagram stories and then started going to like bigger markets and then expos and all of that. So it's just kind of been this like,
yeah, you stumbled
gradual. Yep. And actually Palm Street reached out to me and was like, hey, we want you to sell. Like you have like, and I was like, nah, I'm not a seller. I'm a buyer. I'm not a seller. And I would see them at different events and they were like, Cass, come on, like you could do this. Like, you know, so they helped motivate me into getting into it. And then, yeah, after I got back from IAS last year, I was like, all right, let's give this a try. And it's done pretty well. So it's really fun. And I love it just because I get to deal with the community, like every single day, pretty much. It's like sharing that passion all the time.
Yeah, it's so fun. So today's episode is how to propagate your anthuriums from seed. But before we dive into that, for those who are anthurium curious, can you give me your top couple of tips for having thriving anthurium? Because I think some people might spend $100 on an anthurium and bring it home and accidentally kill it and see it go crispy. Mm-hmm. So what are your top tips?
So one, take your, like the biggest thing is you don't want to get an anthurium that is going to require way different conditions than what you have to offer. So if you don't have time to constantly water, keep humidity high, all those things that people are afraid of, find a lower maintenance anthurium. Find something that rocks life.
Okay, so what would be the, let's talk about that. So most of us probably need the lower maintenance ones. So what are the best, you know, starter anthuriums?
I'm a huge fan of Clary's, the Clarinerviums.
That's the one I know. One,
they're absolutely stunning. They do amazing in ambient conditions. They actually don't like to be overwatered. So you have less watering, less like humidity needs, like, so they're a thicker leaf. Mm-hmm. They take a beating a lot easier. So that's one of my first ones I always recommend. And then also some of the pendens ones like Vitrifolium, Palladiflorum. Those are those long, strappy, and mine rock life inside as well. Mm. So those are some of like the really good ones. You could also get like Pedatum that has like the fingers. The anthurium super bum.
Yeah, I have a bird's nest. I have multiple bird's nest anthuriums. They are so hardy.
They are very hardy.
Well, I have two bird's nest anthuriums and then one clarinervium. I underwater this green wall to like embarrassing extents. And I can't believe these plants are still alive, particularly the anthuriums. And the bird's nest anthuriums bloom and rebloom all the time for me, way more than my clarinervium ever has. So I thought that's really fascinating too. I would never buy, this was sent to me, the bird's nest. I don't know if I would have ever bought it, but now it's quickly like one of my favorite plants. Like I would totally buy it again.
And the great thing about the bird's nest is one, again, they're super hardy. They got those thick roots that really, and just the same as Clary's. Clary's have those really thick roots. And the bird's nest, you have like so many different colors and you can get variegated ones pretty easy. And there's like all different colors. So yeah, those are a great one, super easy. And the other thing people don't realize with anthurium is they're not as light dependent as a lot. I mean, they do need light, don't get me wrong. But you got to think of it like anthurium grow under the canopy in the rainforest.
Yeah.
Usually they're not getting that beaming high light. Like mine do great with just regular grow lights. And also the great thing about anthurium is they will tell you if they're getting enough light or not enough light. You will see, if you see an anthurium and like, so you got the pot and the stems are coming out and if they're growing at a natural normal rate, you're good. If you see them starting to get really long stems, like they're trying to reach for the light, that anthurium wants more. If you see the stem starting to go downward and your leaves are like going this way, they're like, okay, hey, this is way too much light.
Way too much light. Mm-hmm. What about brown tips?
Oh, there's so many different things that could be. It could be underwatering and then overwatering. That is probably one of the biggest things I have found in my case is my quickest way to lose leaves, kill a plant, is with Anthurium, you underwater them, you let them dry out too much. And then you're like,
oh, let me compensate.
Then I compensate. And what has happened is those roots have dried out. Then you add all that water and they rot. So you're going to get dry rot, root rot.
When I meet listeners in the wild, one of the most commented things is that they come up to me and say, oh, I really want to get one of the wind chimes you're always talking about. Wind River wind chimes are the greatest wind chimes on the planet, and they would make the perfect gift this holiday season. My Wind River wind chimes have really underscored my life for the last couple of years, plant friends, and they have brought me so much joy and peace I can't even explain to you. Whenever I hear them singing throughout the day, I am reminded to come into the present and take a deep breath. It is so relaxing. It is such a mindful reminder. And it is also the most delightful accompaniment to all of my garden time. As we enter this gifting season, Wind River wind chimes make incredible gifts. You can engrave the wind sail on the wind chime with meaningful dates, names, or phrases. I recently got Mama Fiella one for her new backyard reno, and I know she's going to love it because she has been asking for a Wind River wind chime of her own ever since she visited my house and became enamored with the sounds. So gift yourself or your loved ones ongoing moments of peace with Wind River wind chimes. Use the code GROWINGJOY at checkout to get a free engraving on any engravable wind chime. So it's done for you and it's free. Head to windriverchimes.com to listen to all of your different melodious options. The chime underscoring this ad is the one I have. It's the Corinthian Bells 50-inch wind chime. And use code GROWINGJOY at windriverchimes.com for a free engraving to add a special element to your gift. That's code GROWINGJOY at windriverchimes.com. Real talk, plant friends. If you've been curious about trying the special Manukora honey that I've been talking about on this podcast for almost a year now, now is the time because Manukora honey is having their largest sale of the year now to December 2nd. It's their Black Friday sale, and you're getting $150 off your first order of their Black Friday starter kit. And all you have to do is go to manukora.com/bloom. Now, if you don't know what Manukora honey is, it's magic. Literally yesterday, I was running late and I just like needed a little snack as I was moving through my day. And I took one of the travel packets and I like ate it like a push pop. It's so good. It really tastes more like caramel than it tastes like honey, but it's ethically harvested from remote forests in New Zealand. It's packed with powerful nutrients that support your immunity and your gut health. It has 3 times the antioxidants and prebiotics of regular honey, and it has a special antibacterial compound called MGO. Add it to your coffee in the morning for a brown sugar latte-esque taste. So if you want to try it, take advantage of this discount and go to Manukora, Manukora.com/bloom to get $150 off of your first order with their Black Friday starter kit. It comes with that MGO 850 plus Manukora honey jar, 35 honey travel sticks. You're going to go through all of these. They're great to travel with for weekends away. A wooden spoon and a guidebook. That's Manukora.com/bloom only through December 2nd to get $150 off your first starter kit.
Most Anthurium, you want to keep them lightly moist. Mm-hmm. So just your watering conditions can definitely be it. It could be under fertilizing, over fertilizing. It could be too much light, not enough light. It could be pests. It's, you know, that's why the apps that you hear, they're like, oh yeah, yeah, you know, just get the app. It'll tell you what's wrong. No. There's, you just got to like look at what you're doing and kind of try to figure it out from the plant. One of my biggest recommendations is pull it out, check those roots. That is the quickest way to lose an Anthurium is when those roots start going. Pull them out. If those roots look bad, unpot it, clean those roots off, take all those bad roots off, snip them. And if it's still got a good root base, put it back in there and go again. And then if it doesn't, throw it in, you know, I will take an Anthurium that has 0 roots, throw it in some moss and perlite, toss it in a tote, and bam, give it a month or two and I'll have roots and it'll be back to its, you know, happy self.
Very nice. Do you put anything in the water that you hydrate the moss with in your pot boxes?
So my friends call it my muscle milk. I swear by it. So it's by Growth Technologies. Mm-hmm. I use the foliage focus in the root zone and I water my anthurium with it, all my anthurium inside. I'm not as good about the greenhouse, mm-hmm. but every single time I water, I do a diluted version of it. And then the foliage focus in the root zone, you're having those nice, happy roots, good foliage. And my anthurium babies grow to the point my friends bring me their seedlings and say, grow this for me.
Right.
Because like I will have one of theirs or they'll have one of theirs. And it's like this little tiny, like this size. And mine's got like the same exact plant. It's like leaves this big.
Speaking of seedlings, you are the anthurium seedling whisperer. And I didn't know that I could harvest my own seeds from anthurium and grow them out and make mm-hmm. a million more plant babies. Mm-hmm. So I need to know, how do you do this? Tell me everything. Okay.
So it's really going to depend on the type of anthurium you have. Some of the pendens ones, I'm not sure about the bird's nest because I haven't done any with the bird's nest yet. But you're going to get your anthurium, when they put out a new leaf, they will usually put out a flower or I call them inflows, inflorescence. And it's going to come out. And I actually have one right here that I brought over. And they go through, so before I pull that down, they're going to go through multiple stages. When they first come out, they will go into their female stage and you will see them and they will get, it looks almost like little water droplets on it. Like they will get kind of moist and sticky. And that's the female stage. That's when she's receptive and she is like, bring the pollen on. And then after it goes through the female stage, it'll then move into the male stage, which is the pollen stage, and it'll put out its own pollen. Now, this is the plant trying not to self-pollinate, which some plants do. There's always a, you know, a loophole somewhere, but normally they're going to go female stage. That's when you can pollinate them. Then they go into male stage. They put out pollen and then you can pollinate something else. So you'll take, when they're in that female stage, you're going to take pollen from another plant and you're going to put it on there. Just messy about it. I will go over to the inflow of one with pollen, get it on my fingers, go over to the female, and then I will just rub it on there. And then depending on the plant will depend on how long you're going to wait for seeds. Clary's, Bessier's, Luxuriant's, and then there's some others, but those primary ones, those are going to take you nearly a year.
Whoa.
Yes, it's going to be about a year of waiting. So I have right here one of my Clary's. Actually, let me pull her out of this pot.
Okay, what am I looking at? This looks like an insane monster fruit of sorts.
Kind of. And you can think of it kind of as a fruit. So once you pollinate the inflorescence, it then becomes what's called an infructescence. I may have pronounced that wrong. Mm-hmm. But that's when it's going to go through its process of producing seeds. And depending on the plant will depend on how long it'll take. It can take anywhere from just like 3-4 months to 12, 17 months. And, you know, it can vary. This one right here that I have is a Clary. So we're working on about 12 months now.
Wow. So let me ask a question before we get in there. Okay. So just to recap, I have one Clarinervium. Mm-hmm. It blooms, which is the inflorescence, which is actually mm-hmm. a spike that has many, many flowers on it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That one bloom has a female era and a male era. The female era, it's sticky, which is mm-hmm. when you would go in and pollinate it. Yep. The male era is when it gives off pollen, which I'm assuming you're collecting, which we'll mm-hmm. talk about later. Then, so you're going to pollinate the female era and mm-hmm. then you leave the plant alone. So then you basically just walk away and you let the plant do its thing to turn into seeds or I guess kind of berries. This all happens on the plant while the inflorescence is still attached to the plant. My goodness gracious. So cool. Okay. Please continue. I'm recapping.
No, you're good. You're good. It's a lot.
Yeah.
It is a lot. So yeah. So once they go through, they're going to produce their berries. You'll keep an eye on them and the plant will let you know. They'll start changing. Usually they'll be like this green color, or it can be a plethora of different colors based on the plant, but they will then change color as they ripen. Because just like berries that you're going to eat, those berries are going to ripen. And once they're ripe, you can like run your hands over them. They'll start like falling off. And like these ones right here will go from green to orange. They'll be like a really bright orange. They'll get nice and soft, just like any kind of plant. Once it's ripe, you'll be able to tell that it's ripe. And then you're going to pluck those berries off and you're going to harvest. And then in the inside of the berry will be seeds. And it can be, depending on the plant, usually 1-2 seeds, occasionally a 3. And then you're just going to get all the little berry juice off of them. And then you're going to put them in like a little container on either whatever your substrate choice is, whether it's moss, tree fern, peat moss, you know, everybody has their own choice. And then you're just going to put them in there and you're going to have like a bunch of seeds. I know the people listening won't be able to see this, but if they want to come back and check the video, this one right here, I just got moss with a bunch of seeds in there. And then I close them up.
You have like a Tupperware, plastic Tupperware filled with dampened moss that mm-hmm. you then put your harvested seed. Do you have to let the seeds dry out or?
No, you don't want them to dry out at all.
So you're taking the fresh seeds, popping
fresh seeds.
Your moist media to help them germinate.
They're not going to be like our tomatoes or our veggies or anything. You don't want to let them dry out. You want to process them immediately and then get them in something moist. I like to keep them in some sort of humidity dome. I have a variety. I love to go food to go containers. You can do trays. If you got like the 10-20 trays, put lids on it, whatever you can put them in, that's going to keep the humidity and be able to get light. So you're just going to, and there's, like I said, a bazillion different ways, but overall you want the humidity, you want the light, and then you're just going to close them up, set them back under a grow light for a while. And in a month or so, come back and check on them. And then you're going to have little babies.
Wow. And you're showing me another container that you've mm-hmm. clearly put, and you've put the seeds very close to each other because it's a small little Tupperware container. And I'm seeing mm-hmm. like 20 to 30 sprouts. So then, mm-hmm. so it's sprouted. There's one leaf per seed germinating. Are there roots?
Yep. There'll be little roots coming down. And then, so this is the stage where once they get this, like usually 1-2 leafer, I will come in and separate them out and then start potting them up into their own individual. Because you're going to have some seeds that aren't going to germinate, some that will, you know, and then they're going to have little roots in there. This is my first time doing it in moss and perlite because I'm moving more to moss and perlite, which I think for the seedlings is going to be kind of a pain in the butt to get the roots. But the roots will be in there and you just separate them and then you'll pot them up into their own individual little pots and go from there. I just find it easier at this stage just because you don't know how many are going to germinate. Throw them all in there and let them go, then come back and pick out the good ones and get them potted up.
How do you harden them off from going from this extremely moist Tupperware environment to once you take the 1 or 2 leaves out and you're repotting? What size pot are you repotting them into?
I pot them into like a little 2-incher.
2-incher.
And these little 2-inchers will last for a good few months because this gives them plenty of room. I don't like going smaller than this. You can go smaller than this, but I find when I have went smaller than a 2-inch, I'm having to take that extra time to up pot them sooner. So mine do well. I'll usually pot them down a little low in it so that as they do grow, it's not like they're getting too much substrate. And then as they grow, I'll add more substrate on top.
Okay.
And go from there.
And are you putting them in a high humidity environment or the leaves are hardening off after you transplant them?
So I have been, like I said, through this roller coaster of learning process. And as I have now become like a grower and a seller, last fall, when I moved everything in, I had this ideas of grandeur. I was going to acclimate everything to ambient to make everything because I was like, these can be grown in ambient conditions. That is great unless you have a full-time job and you're growing thousands of plants and don't have time to water them all. Mm-hmm. And so I lost a lot of plants because they dried out. So then I kind of went to the 10-20 trays, you know, the like you can use, and that works okay. But my like relatively new found godsend is totes, the plastic totes that you get from Walmart, you get from Amazon, whatever size, depending on where you're at, get a clear tote with a clear lid is my favorite one. Because then I just get these big shelving racks, put grow lights on there and throw my totes underneath. And my plants love life. You're keeping them at high humidity. They're not drying out super fast. I can just go in there and spray. It's also amazing if you have something with pests because it's keeping it contained to one container instead of them spreading out through everywhere. And then I can just go in there and spray for pests if one of the containers gets the pests and keep them quarantined. It has helped on so many levels. The big things though that I found is if it does have a new emergent and you pull it out of that tote, it can often get mad because we just went from like nearly 100% humidity to lower. So I like to kind of wait if I sell one with a new leaf that comes out of there and make sure it's at least hardened off enough that it can take the change. The tote life, so they stay in pretty high humidity. And then we go from here, at least during the summer, well, actually even in the winter, they'll go to my greenhouse, which is high humidity. But that's because I'm growing in mass quantities and that's what is ultimate for them. But you can definitely work on acclimating them once you buy them to your conditions.
Right. Because my thought is if I'm doing this with one clarinervium for fun, right? Like, because I want to try it, maybe I'm getting 8 berries. So maybe I'm getting 16 seeds and probably they're not all going to germinate. So, and then I'm going to want to not keep them in tubs because I want to enjoy them and see them in my green wall or see them forever. So how would you recommend me growing out those seeds as a just home collector?
So
what is the time to harden them off, to take them out of?
So I would give them, just to give them the best chances, you give them a couple leaves, get them to where they have like a decent sized leaf and you can feel that it's got like a little bit thicker texture. It's not that really papery thin one. So you could have them in like a little cloche or a cabinet or anything like that when they're little. You can also, what I was doing for a long time was the little dessert cups that have the little dessert cup lids.
Yeah.
You can have that. And then it's clear. You can still enjoy it. So yeah, but at the smaller sizes, I recommend just a bit more humidity. You could also do humidity trays, like put it on a pebble tray and keep water under it. But at this size, I would definitely keep like something over it to help give it the ultimate conditions to get started. Let it get that root, those roots, you know, growing nice and well. They're not going to dry out too fast. Because once you take this out into the ambient conditions, these are going to dry out really fast. So
also, I guess the strategy there too, like wait till there's 5 leaves and that emergent leaf has hardened off, take it out of the container. Also knowing that those leaves probably ultimately won't do well, but there's an established root system, which will throw off new leaves, which then will be hardened off because they'll be in your new environment, almost expecting those original leaves to probably wither and die, but then you'll be growing a more robust plant after.
You want to expect, especially as a baby, your first few leaves, you're going to lose those relatively quickly because it's going to outgrow that. The stem's going to get long enough. You're going to put substrate over those. So don't even stress about those initial leaves. Like half the time, like I'm putting substrate over them or ripping them off because they're just taking up space. So yeah, don't stress that at all.
What are the biggest mistakes you've seen people make when trying this at home?
Oh goodness.
Or what are the biggest mistakes you've made? You know, either one.
Well, one is letting them dry out. That was last fall. My biggest killer to my anthuriums was letting them dry out too much and then coming back and being, oh God, they're dry. Let me water them. And then they got root rot. And your anthurium will tell you when there's something wrong. And they'll start with the smaller leaves usually, or the new emergence. If you look at your anthurium and you're like, you're not looking so hot, get on it quick, because a lot of times you can rescue it before you wait until all the leaves are done. And I'd say a good majority of the time it's the roots. Get in there and check those roots.
You mentioned rescuing and that you have, you know, prop boxes of rescue plants. If you have an anthurium that's going south, what is your protocol for rehabbing a plant?
So I'm going to rip it out of its substrate. I'm going to check for pests. Pests are, especially I grow outside in a greenhouse setting. I have pests. If anybody tells you they don't have pests, they're either lying
or they have pests and they don't know that they have pests.
Or they don't know. So it's always checking for pests first and then checking those roots. And if those roots are bad, I'm going to try to remove all the bad roots. I'm going to change what substrate it's in. And like I said, I've been through a plethora of different substrates. So obviously that one isn't working well. And if it's too bad, I'm going to chop any or all of the roots off depending on it. And then I'm going to throw it in some moss and perlite with a little bit of charcoal in there and I'm going to toss it in a tote.
Okay. And then it sounds like you've been through a lot of different substrates. And I think the key you're saying is make sure the soil doesn't dry out. So depending on how, what type, what your plant parent personality is, that might look different. But I'm curious, as you've tried so many, what's your go-to substrate right now?
So especially for tote life, it's moss and perlite.
Okay. And then what about for like potted life?
A very chunky, airy mix. Anthurium, they want to be, they don't want to be dry. That's a good way to say it. They don't want to be sopping wet, but they don't want to be dry. But anthurium roots need air. So you're going to want that big, I get the big number four perlite, put that in there. I have a little bit of charcoal, and then it's like the coco core, the orchiata, just a good chunky mix. Of course, if I'm bringing them inside where they're going to dry out a lot faster, I'm going to add a little bit more like maybe a little bit of Fox Farm soil or something like that to help hold some moisture. But in my greenhouse, I have a misting system. They're getting watered multiple times a day in the totes. They don't dry out very fast. So I want something really airy that is well draining.
Keep up watering with so that it's moist. Okay, cool. You sell on Palm Street, which is one of our sponsors, which is like such a fortunate coincidence. I was at Southeast Plant Show. I hadn't really known much about Palm Street, and everybody was talking about Palm Street there. I can't believe how this app has like taken over. So if people want to buy from you, or if people want to follow you for your humor videos as well, where can they find you?
But you can find me everywhere at Plant Addicted Cass. On Palm Street, on Instagram. I'm trying to dip my toes into TikTok a little bit.
Okay.
I haven't made it to YouTube, so you won't find me there unless they're coming to find you.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm Plant Addicted Cass everywhere. I do live sales, especially as of the last 2 months. I've taken this on full time. Actually, I think I'm a month and a half into doing this full time. So I'm doing live sales 4 to 5 times a week.
You can get sick deals on these live sales. It's crazy.
Yes. Yes. And it's kind of addicting. So be careful.
Yeah.
I do recommend if you have an addictive personality, be very careful because you can get yourself, because there's so many good deals. Your soil is only $5.
It's crazy.
It's only $20.
I know. It's crazy. And if you download it via my link, because they're a sponsor, it's growingjoywithmaria.com/palmstreet, you'll get $55 in coupons, which then you can use to go shop with Cass if you're curious about an anthurium.
Yes.
This was so fun. I'm so happy to have met you this year. You're such a light, and I'm so excited for your new full-time endeavor, and I wish you the best of luck. And we'll have all of your links to everything in the show notes.
Awesome. And if I can, shout out a plug for everybody. I am sure this won't be shown in time, but y'all also make sure to go check out the International Aroid Society.
Yes.
We have a show every year. If you don't make it this year, come next year. We also have the Big Plant Expo next year coming up in April in Charleston. And it's so amazing to get out and bring our communities together for events like this, even if you don't want to buy, even on Palm Street. If you just want to come hang out, come ask questions, because if you have that question, somebody else has that question.
Totally.
I find like people will message me and ask me questions, and I am a one-man show. And so I have a hard time sitting down and giving people all the information they would need to answer that. So come follow me on my live sales. Come see me out at one of the events, whether it's IAS, whether it's the Big Plant Expo, come check us out in person so that I can help answer any questions and chit-chat.
This episode will air after IAS this year, and I'm sadly missing it because I'm going to be on vacation at my nature spa, completely off the grid.
Darn.
But it is like one of the go-to conference. It's one of the go-to plant shows. So mark it in your calendar for next year. And yes, this big plant show in April, for sure.
Yes. Absolutely. Amazing. And the other thing is with those, and sorry, I know we're kind of wrapping up,
go for it.
Is when you do see these big events, because I hear a lot of people like, oh, I can't go to that. I can't afford it. When I'm done with IAS this year, I start a fund for next year's IAS.
Totally.
So I start putting a little bit of money aside. I start making my plans. I start finding my friends that I'm going to go get an Airbnb with, that I'm going to drive down with. I'm going to do all of that. It is, you can easily spend a lot of money, but just if you start planning ahead of time, it's so worth it, because it's literally one of my favorite things in the whole world to do is go to these plant events. So I love getting out, meeting everybody. It's hot and humid though. Make sure you bring your fans if you come to Miami.
I know, I'm dying. I live there. I live an hour north of there, and I've been melting all summer. It's been miserable.
It's bananas.
Well, I can't wait to see you on Pop Street, and I will talk to you soon, friend. All right. Thank you, Cass. I hope you love this episode as much as I did. I just think her story is so incredible, from recovery to this like rare plant pro, just propagating plants and making it happen. She's really proof that plants can transform your lives and change your lives. Follow her at Plant Addicted Cast on Instagram and Palm Street. Palm Street is one of our newer partners, and they are so amazing. I love scrolling that app while I sit on my couch in the evening. It's so fun. And also, if you are interested in supporting Cass, you can use my credit with Palm Street to get coupons towards your first purchase with Cass. So you can go to growingjoywithmaria.com/palmstreet. If you download the app from that link, you get, I think, up to $55 in coupons towards your first purchases. So then you can use them towards purchases with Cass. Definitely worth the download. All of the links will be in the show notes. I hope this sparked your curiosity, tickled the plant nerd in you, and of course, helps you keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.